with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I am hard-pressed to put words to what I'm feeling right now. It is a sense of elation. It is a sense of joy. It is a sense of profound happiness. Intermarried with a sense of how much work remains to be done. We got one to put in the win column today, folks. And by we, I mean you. All of us, everyone who's called a congressman, everyone who ever went to change.gov and implored Barack Obama to get serious about mountain removal, we got a win today. I assume you've seen the news by now. Lisa Jackson, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency administration, the EPA, Lisa Jackson dropped a rock on the environmental predators today. Remember when we talked about the Fourth Circuit opening the floodgates for oodles of new permits to go forward and destroy what's left of southern West Virginia via mountain removal? It was a very frustrating day. Well, hard work pays off. If there's anybody out there who has doubts as to the efficacy of hard work, let this be a lesson. Hard work pays off. Letters went out today from the Environmental Protection Agency administration. Get it right, Bob. I'm a little loopy. Forgive me. And it put paid to all those permits that the Fourth Circuit, those slaves to the coal industry, had turned loose on us. They've been stopped. They've been stopped. Just stopped. Hundreds of them stopped. But for the time being. The EPA said today via its administrator, Lisa Jackson, that there was entirely too much risk from these permits for them to go forward until the project's impacts on streams and wetlands can be reviewed. In other words, it's pending review, just like in an NFL football game. The last play is under review. You. The EPA is urging the Army Corps of Engineers not to issue permits for two new projects unless their impacts are reduced. The projects would allow companies to fill thousands more feet of headwater streams with mine filth, with toxic filth at two sites in here in West Virginia and Kentucky. The letter from Lisa Jackson said, the two letters reflect, this was her statement, EPA's considerable concern regarding the environmental impact these projects would have on fragile habitats and streams. I have directed the agency to review other mining permit requests as well. EPA will use the best science and follow the letter of the law. Oh, Jesus, isn't that sweet? EPA will use the best science and follow the letter of the law in ensuring we are protecting our environment. The EPA went on and noted that the demolition operations in question, quote, would likely cause water quality problems in streams below the, see, they're still using the wrong language, they call them mines, would cause significant degradation to streams buried by mining activities, and that proposed steps to offset these impacts are inadequate. And for the first time in over 8 years, the EPA has stepped in and said it will be actively involved in the review of this humongous list of permits awaiting approval by the Army Corps of Engineers, which had been in the business of rubber stamping anything that came from a coal company. Blow up a mountain? Permitted. Blow up another mountain? Permitted. Blow up another mountain? Permitted. Blow up school? Permitted. Blow up your mama? Permitted. Just a rubber stamp. Another day at work. The EPA has the authority to review and veto any permit issued by the Corps under the Clean Water Act. It just didn't exercise, you know, because government is the problem, not the solution. Just didn't do it in the last 8 years. We have a victory tonight, my friends. We have a victory of amazing, amazing proportions. Play a little song, if that's okay. Gentleman's name is Ben Solee. He played for us the Sunday we were being taught all the ins and outs of Washington, D.C. advocacy. It was a real treat at the very end. He was on his way through, he was on his way home, I believe, home to Lexington, Kentucky, from an appearance in Brooklyn. And he brought his cello in, and he played a gorgeous song I think you'll probably recognize. And I want to play that for you now. Ben Solee is a cellist of considerable talent. Just take these couple of moments to revel in this moment. They don't come often. They don't come near often enough. But revel in it for this moment. And then we'll talk about it some more. This is Ben Solee.
the stars were mine. So it's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. And it's too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there. It's beyond the sky. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. I'd give her the world. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. I just need some comfort, some kind of belief that this war we're fighting can really bring some peace. There's no security. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. And I'm trying to find it, some better place. We're having the biggest gun, it's some kind of race. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Yes, a change is gonna come.
Hot or what? Ben Solee on his take on change is gonna come. And it is coming. For those of you scoring at home, and those of you listening alone, that was a, this is a profound moment. And you know what? What I saw today, I want to say, I want to be among the first to say, yeah, this is change I can believe in. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, in coming days, we're going to see a veritable crap storm of right-wingers screaming, he's putting people out of work! These permits weren't active yet, okay? Whose story is this? Even MSNBC is getting this dead wrong. What's it say here? The practice has a huge economic impact in Appalachia. Bull! Mountaintop mines. Removal of mountains. Come on, journalists, get on board. Get it right. This ain't mining. Mountain removal employs some 14,000 people across the four states. Well, I can't speak for Kentucky, Virginia, or Tennessee. But I can tell you that there are less than 5,000, perhaps less than 4,000 people employed as mountain removers in West Virginia. And every last one of them has the mindset, and those of you who passed Aristotelian logic in college might want to work on this one. Every last one of them has the mindset of, I can feed my family by blowing up mountains. Therefore, blowing up mountains is good. Does that pass the test? I mean, if P, then Q. No, it doesn't. But the screaming has begun. Honest to Pete, the screaming has begun. With wingers hollering bloody murder, I saw one comment. The earth is a big rock. Come on, folks. Pushing a few mountains over ain't no big deal. It's the mountains is made of the same thing the rest of the earth is made of. And then there's the wingnut out there who says, well, thanks. Obama's going to put all of West Virginia out of work. Chains you can believe in. Really. Because the full-on hissy is on. Ground solar doesn't work at night and never will. Wind doesn't work on a quiet day or if it's too windy. Big waste of money. And windmills kills birds. There will be a profound display of ignorance in the next few days, so. Oh, here's a creative one to share with you. Parodying and making fun of John Prine. Then the environmentalists came with the world's largest cause. They vilified the miners and shut down the companies. Wait a minute, that don't rhyme. Well, they succeeded in stopping the miners from doing their jobs. Then they patted themselves on the back as saviors of the planet. And, Daddy, why can't I have a computer or a TV like the other kids? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but your pa lost his job. The hippies came and took it away. What? But that's where they are, these poor fools. Poor, benighted fools. Now, the other side of this, if we're smart about it, is to start looking for ways to employ West Virginians in other ways besides, and Appalachian people, in other ways besides destroying their own homes.
Here, boy, I'm going to give you a big wad of money. All you got to do is poop in your own nest a lot.
Well, gosh, Mr. Coal Company Boss, I'll be happy to have it.
Now go over there and do that in somebody else's house for a while, too, and then your neighbors and your next neighbors. Sure thing, boss. You gonna keep paying me? Looky here, I got me new Chinese TV set.
That's probably a little unkind of me, but it is the mindset that prevails. As long as I can go to Walmart and buy new Chinese slave labor clothes for my family, as long as I can have a really big Chinese TV set on my wall, as long as every 3 or 4 years I can go and trade me in the family pickup truck and get me a new one,
it don't matter what I do to my neighbors. Because I'm a living the good life. Hip, hip, hip.
And that mindset is foisted off upon mountain removal workers every day. They don't have the ability to look to actually objectively look at what they've done. Because they're told every day, we're actually doing better, for these mountains are better off now that we've made them pretty and flat. They are. Now we can put a prison or a airstrip or a school or a Walmart on it. That makes a better mountain when the mountain, what used to be the mountain's got a Walmart on it. No, this is, it's, oh, here's a nice one. You cakewalkers, you lotus eaters, you who already have yours, you'll turn America into a nation of want. Want for jobs, want for energy, want for roads, want for housing, want for food, and at our knees in front of the government's meager selective cornucopia without hope or resources of our own. Using your rules, no public or private works, no canals, power lines, bridges, highways, railroads, tunnels, harbors, power plants, refineries, or factories can be built anymore. Your legion of corrupt lawyers and political biologists. Political biology. Now, where do they offer that program? Just ask. Political biologists will always find a plant, an animal, a fish, some vermin or bacteria the project threatens. Since you know this better than anyone, it is without a doubt your goal. It was also the goal of the Strategic Bombing Committee that was set up to destroy the Axis economy during World War II. Do the work, folks. Pick up a book and read it. What book? I mean, these loonies are around the bend. But I'm so proud right now. I'm so proud. So proud. Because it's not every day you get to watch your government respond to the needs of the people. It's not every day that you get to see high-ranking government officials act, remember that they are people and that there is a world outside of Washington, D.C. Lisa Jackson did that today. Lisa Jackson is a child of the Gulf Coast. Lisa Jackson was born and raised in New Orleans. Lisa Jackson has wept to see what the Bush administration did as her beloved home was allowed to be submerged beneath filthy waters. Lisa Jackson spoke at PowerShift. You remember when we broadcast, well, we broadcast her address. She spoke at PowerShift. And then she walked off stage, where she, to her surprise, met a soft-spoken, beautiful, redheaded woman. Entirely by chance. backstage of Power Shift that Friday night, Lisa Jackson met my wife. Lisa Jackson was not accosted by or in any wise descended upon by my beautiful wife. Lisa Jackson's handlers were just the same, yeah, because they're handlers of a high-level government official, aghast that one of the common people was speaking. But Lisa Jackson stopped for a moment as my wife spoke to her, and she said, "Ms. Jackson, you just spoke to a room full of committed young people, and you have given them great hope and inspiration. We need that hope and inspiration in Appalachia." And she looked at the handler and said, "Boys, now just settle down. I'm no threat. I'm nothing but a mama. Nothing but a mommy. Just like Miss Jackson here is a mommy. And we're going to talk like a couple of mommies for a second." And she said, "My little ones are out in the room there. You just talk to them. And I know how much you care about yours. We need someone to care about ours as much as we do in Appalachia." It was the briefest of conversations. But if there is some sort of supreme being, it made sure that the words rang true. They stood and they talked together for a couple of minutes, and then the administrator of the EPA went on. Yesterday in Huntington, at a brief court hearing, lawyers for the Bush administration Department of Justice said that the Obama administration was in the process of reviewing its stance on mountaintop removal. They said that in front of no small number of people who have worked for so very long to stop this practice. I was in that room. And today, like a gift unexpected, we receive this. And it is inspiring at a level that is scarcely possible for me to fully enunciate. I am so proud. I'm so proud of everyone who has had a hand in this. I'm so proud of Judy Bonds, Lorella Scarborough, Vernon Haltom, Janice Neese. So proud of Vivian Stockman and Diane Beatty. So proud of Chuck Nelson and Bo Webb, Rory McIlmoyle, Nick Regalado, Maria Gano. So proud of people like Terry Blanton, Ann League, and literally countless thousands others who, in the face of ridicule and outright hatred, have stood up for the right thing. God, I am so proud. Because in this one shining moment, that work has borne fruit. Make no mistake, the fight is not over. Make no mistake, the task is not complete. Make no mistake, the job is not done. This is not the beginning of the end. But it is, as Winston Churchill said, the end of the beginning. There are still explosions taking place. 4 o'clock came on Cherry Pond Mountain above Peachtree today. And massive explosions rained toxins, dirt, and filth down on the little community of Naoma. The bombs are still going off on Kaford Mountain. The valleys are still being filled at the operations of Fola Coal. It is still going on, and the fight continues. But for the briefest of instants, the very briefest of instants, we have a win, and we have something we can put our hands on and show to the world and say, yes, yes, someone has finally acknowledged that not only are Appalachian people Americans, we are actually human beings. Yes. Yes. I'm looking at an email right now from Chuck Nelson. He says, the coal industry may be big, but sticking together, we're bigger. The coal industry may have big money, but we're richer in heart. And the coal industry may be strong, but united, we're stronger. I salute all who have worked so hard and given so much to practically living on the road and away from their families. God bless all, and let's continue to move forward. God bless you, Chuck. The headline says, hope is alive in the mountains and valleys of Appalachia. Obama administration halts mountaintop removal permits for further review. This is a press release jointly issued by Appalachian citizens groups. Citizens from across Appalachia strongly applauded the EPA's decision to deny permits for 2 mountaintop removal coal mining operations and put hundreds more mountaintop coal mining permits under review until the agency can evaluate the impact of mountaintop removal coal mining on the nation's streams and wetlands. During the previous campaign, then-candidate Barack Obama promised to end mountaintop removal and to make protecting Appalachian streams a top priority of his EPA. Today, the Obama administration and the EPA have taken a critical first step which will protect the economy, environment, energy, and energy future of Appalachia. This decision illustrates a dramatic departure from the energy policies that are destroying the mountains, the culture, the rivers, and forests of Appalachia, and our most deeply held American values, said Bobby Kennedy, Jr., president of the Waterkeeper Alliance. By this decision, President Obama signals our embarking on a new energy future that promises wholesome, dignified, prosperous, and healthy communities that treasure our national natural resources. Chuck Nelson, a retired deep miner and board member of the Huntington, West Virginia-based Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, said, after being stepped on by the Bush administration for 8 years, I hope this burden's about to be lifted up off our community. I've been seeing people suffering and watched the mountains literally coming down on top of people, and this decision couldn't have come at a better time to save my river and save these mountains. Mountain removal is preferred by coal companies because it employs fewer workers. Coal mining once provided over 120,000 jobs in West Virginia alone, but that number has dropped to less than 15,000. Instead of bringing wealth to the region, areas of high strip mining and mountaintop removal have remained some of the most impoverished counties in the United States. At a time when the Obama administration is so clearly focused on rebuilding the economy, this decision creates the perfect opportunity to jumpstart the economy of the region in a way that is environmentally sound and sustainable for this and future generations in Appalachia. Not only does mountaintop removal coal mining destroy mountains, it also destroys the economic potential of Appalachia, said Dr. Matthew Wasson, director of programs for the environmental nonprofit organization Appalachian Voices. This decision rekindles hope for a new economy in Appalachia built around green jobs and renewable energy. Carl Shoup, a retired coal miner and member of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth in Harlan County, Kentucky, said, "We finally have an administration in place that uses scientific reasoning to make decisions instead of ideology. We fought for this for years. I hope the EPA comes through and permanently stops the permits in our community." Appalachia is rich with alternative energy potential and green job opportunities in many places which were slated to be blasted, such as Coal River Mountain in West Virginia. A recent study has shown that more jobs, more energy, and more tax income for surrounding communities can be created by harnessing the wind potential of Coal River Mountain rather than blasting the top off the mountain and shoving the waste directly into streams. If the EPA bases their conclusions on science, logic, common sense, and human decency, they will abolish mountaintop removal. If they base their conclusions on coal industry lobbyists' influence, they will do a disservice to the citizens. The EPA needs to include the citizens most directly impacted by mountaintop removal in making their determination and not rely upon dirty coal industry pressure, said Vernon Haltom of Coal River Mountain Watch. Rick Hanshew, a Kentuckians for the Commonwealth member of Hueysville, Kentucky, said, "I was hoping Obama would take action the first 100 days. It's a victory that they are even looking at the impacts of these valley fills. There are 9 existing valley fill permits in my neighborhood and 3 more valley fill permits proposed within a mile radius. Both a majority of the American people and Appalachian voters oppose mountaintop removal, and the citizen groups fighting to end mountaintop removal applaud President Obama's decision to listen to the American people. Indeed, this important reversal of these dangerous Bush administration policies is truly change we can believe in." How very, very true. And because you listen to the horn, you, in places far, far away from the monstrous terrorist blasts of the mountain removers, you know what the practice is. And what a horror, indeed, it is. And as I said, you have acted. You have called your congressmen. You have called senators. You have called campaigns. You have posted at change.gov. You have done so many things. In places far, far away from here, you have stood up and told people that it is unacceptable to do this to your fellow Americans in Appalachia, to destroy their homeland so someone can leave the lights on in Atlanta or Birmingham or Memphis or Charlotte. You have done that. And just as people on the ground here who have worked and traveled so tirelessly, just as they are heroes, make no mistake, for what you have done, when your head hits the pillow tonight, when you go to sleep, you will sleep the sleep of the just. You will go to sleep with a clear conscience. You will go to sleep knowing that you too are a hero. And your face, when you rise on the morrow and look into the mirror, your face will have a new shine about it. You will not have any trouble looking into the mirror in the morning. You will do so gladly. You will do so joyfully. And the visage that looks back at you in that glass will have a twinkle in their eye. And the knowledge that you have been part of a massive, massive undertaking to bring people power to the government of the United States of America, to stand as the sovereigns that we are, to demand the government do the right thing, that you have indeed made change we can believe in. And for what it's worth, you have the undying gratitude of me, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, and generations as yet unborn and undreamt of. You will be remembered as people who gave a new birth of freedom to this country and this region. Yes, 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 you will. It is about 18 minutes before the hour. Your thoughts, your phone calls are welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Dialing directly on your own long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is activist radio. This is the horn.
In southern West Virginia, the place where I was born, there's something evil happening. There's something evil going on. They're tearing up our mountains. They're taking away our hills. They're taking all our homeland and making valley fields. This destruction, oh, when will they ever leave? Just go back to where they came from. Let us live in our mountains and be free. We're the keepers of the mountains, as Larry Gibson has said. Love 'em, leave 'em, but I warn you, don't destroy them or leave them for dead. 'Cause we'll hunt you down like outlaws. We'll expose you for what you are. buy and sell our law-making liars. Now the moral of my story, you just listen to what I say. We'll protect our homes, our mountains. You do the same, or you better stay away.
The coal company came in initially and said they were going to do a little strip mining and that wouldn't be any harm to our community. So they got their permits and they came in and they started to cut timber and run off all the wildlife. And then they started their valley field, polluted our streams, killed off our fish. Basically, they came in and they raped our community.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
So your thoughts, your reactions on this momentous day, this momentous occasion, are more than welcome. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, first thing we have to remember is what the EPA gives, the EPA can take away, and so we need to get this made into law.
Bingo. This is, see, the fact of the matter is, Susan, during the Clinton administration, and, you know, I know there's lots of Clinton haters out there.
Yep.
But during the Clinton administration, the EPA was proactive. And the Department of the Interior was proactive. And every time the coal companies tried to do this evil, they stepped in and said, you can't. And so it wasn't that great a problem during the 8 years of the Clinton administration. But because of some, those five evil bastards in Washington, D.C. who gave us George W. Bush, they came in and it was a rape party.
Yep.
For every good thing that government had the capability of doing, it truly was.
Exactly.
And the barn doors were thrown open. Now the barn doors are being closed. But this waveform cycle of do it right, get it wrong, do it right, get it wrong, has got to end. So the right thing has happened, Susan, but it is absolutely necessary. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. It is absolutely necessary that the Clean Water Protection Act be made into law.
In other words, people, call your senators, get the companion bill introduced in the Senate to the House bill. I'm working on my two. Everybody else can work on their two.
There you go. And you know what? There's plenty of members of the House who have not signed on as sponsors.
Uh-huh.
We need at least 150 co-sponsors, and we're not there yet.
Yeah. And I really hate to be a buzzkill.
Oh, then don't.
I'm sorry.
You're gonna.
I'm gonna. You need to play another song. It's called Which Side Are You On?
No, I don't have it handy, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. For those people who haven't hit the web lately, Senator Phil Spector.
Yeah.
yeah. Now that he knows that there is a president in the White House who is going to sign the Employee Free Choice Act, has now announced he is not going to support it.
Yeah, and this is significant, Susan. Yeah, hold on. This is significant because he had supported it in the past, and now he's turned turtle.
Yeah. Well, he supported it before because he knew Bush was in the White House, and he knew he'd veto it. So he was safe.
This is one of the most dirty, cynical forms of politics that America has to offer.
So everybody who's in Pennsylvania, call the little... the short little SOB, and let him know of him. I'm going to be writing and informing him that although I'm not a constituent, I'm going to be sending money to his primary challengers.
Oh, you mean that weird little ultra-right winger?
No, Democratic primary challengers. You can bet your bippy there's going to be Democrats coming up.
Well, but the Democrat will not challenge Spector in the primary.
After this, how much do you want to bet?
No, it's impossible, Susan.
It's impossible?
Yes. Democrats don't run against Republicans in primaries.
Well, I understand that. Well, if necessary, I will send money to somebody who's going to lose the general.
See, this is why Spector has done this. Beyond it being safe to support it when he knows Bush will veto it, Spector also Spector is facing a significant challenge from a little right-wing punk who nearly beat him in the primary last time. He had to fight for his very existence. And if he came out against employee free choice, they're going to take away the secret ballot from the American worker.
Yeah.
Lying bastards.
Tell me about it.
But that's the drumbeat.
And come the general, I will be sending money to his Democratic challenger.
Yes. And the question is who that will be.
I don't care. Breathing and he's got a D after his name. I don't care if he's a blue dog. That really hurts to say that. I will send him money. I would prefer he would be a yellow dog. What can I say?
I know.
But if it'll get him out of office, great.
I know.
If he is not going to, if he's going to pull stuff like this.
Look, Arlen Specter has been a POS from the moment he entered government. Okay? He was an enabler for Richard Nixon's crimes on the Watergate committees. He is pure poison. I wouldn't trust him with the carcass of a dead skunk. He'd do something repulsive with it.
bloody image you just put in my head, Mom.
Oh, yeah. Buzzkill. But that, I mean, that's who Arlen Specter is. But this is where. But bear in mind, okay, before we get too burned up about Arlen Specter, let's remember where the Employee Free Choice Act is concerned. Harry Reid doesn't have the Democratic House in order. Harry Reid can't get Ben Nelson's vote in Nebraska.
Yeah, and Ben Nelson's going to get the same message from me: if you get on board or get lost.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Exactly. And I've been calling these people, and I start out by saying, hey, I don't belong to a union. I've never belonged to a union. But guess what, folks? Now's the time to get in, get on board. What really got me mad was, you know, the reason Specter said he wasn't going to support it? You're going to love this. He said it was because of the economic situation.
Right, we can't do it in a recession.
Oh, I can't do this in a recession. Oh, sorry, can't do it. You know, we're not smart enough.
I could say something really rude and unladylike for a in a moment, but I won't. I'll be nice. I have a I've heard you say a couple times that due to the mercury puffed out by these coal-fired power plants, the women in this country have enough mercury in their bodies to lower the IQ of all of their children by 10 points.
Yes. I am, in stating that, I am repeating the words of Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Do you know where he got it?
Scientists. Studies that were commissioned via his organization. Hair sampling. It's based on hair sampling.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to be passing that on to my senators, too. Anything like that, and, you know, say, and I figure it can't hurt to say, hey, have you got kids? Guess what? You can thank the coal companies for your kids not being 10 points smarter than they are.
Yeah. It's and the thing is, that's not an Appalachian issue. That's an everywhere issue.
Yeah, that's a
that is part of an overall toxicity issue in the United States, Susan, that includes the studies that were done that found, among other things, and I've repeated this before, that because of poisons put into the soil, lactating mothers' breast milk contains components, and this has nothing to do with mountain removal. This has to do with other evils. Lactating women's breast milk contains components of rocket fuel.
Yeah.
Because of mercury and the other vile substances that we have allowed corporate America to pump all over us, we don't feel it, but we just stand in a shower of toxic corporate the effluent.
Okay.
Because of all that, there are women in this country whose breast milk, Susan, qualifies as a hazardous substance under the EPA rules.
The city of Portland gets its water from what's called the Bull Run watershed. Some of the most pristine watershed around. And they tested it. They figured, well, we're going to be really cool. We're going to come up with this really neat results, and we're going to be able to. Okay, well, boy, were they through a shock. They found heavy metals. They found prescription drugs, among which were antidepressants, anticonvulsions, various and sundry, like jet fuel, mercury, all sorts of crap, in a area where there is nobody. And you wouldn't think it would be able to get there, but it does.
Sure.
Now, the only people who are drinking pure water are the people who are using water from artesian wells that are fossil water.
Right.
Yes.
And that's rather rare.
And them little artesians, they're about 6 inches tall. They're some of the damnedest people you ever saw.
Yeah, they used to brew beer up.
That's where I was taking that from, that old Olympia beer commercial.
Watch out for the artesians, you know. Every time we'd go up to Seattle, we'd have to watch for the artesians. The whole planet is contaminated.
Yes. The whole planet is aching, Susan.
Yeah, and we have nobody to blame but ourselves. That's why, yes, this is a wonderful win. But I don't really consider it a win. It's more of a timeout.
This is a breather.
Yeah, because...
But we can't take away from what it is because there are too many people who have put too much into it. And just to get this far...
Just to have to...
Is amazing.
...down and say, no, you're not going to do it. That's amazing, yes.
But
also...
But it also means that we look at the long road ahead.
Yeah. We have to remember that they can do their study and say, oh, okay, everything's cool. Go ahead, guys.
But see, there are other rather delightful political considerations in this. I wrote a letter that was heavily edited by the staff of the Charleston Gazette back in December.
It was.
And I said that I congratulated West Virginians on voting so heavily for John McCain. Because I said, now Barack Obama owes you nothing.
Nothing.
And he is free to do the right thing. So get out there, West Virginians. You were too damn dumb to vote yourself a little bit of political capital.
Oh, yeah.
Now, by West Virginians, I mean, you know, I'm speaking mainly of the pro-coal crowd. You didn't have enough common sense to see the handwriting on the wall. The night before the election, you saw it was going to be a win. And still, the coal monkeys walked on their knuckles over to the voting booth, the mountain removers and the Bill Raineys and the Don Blankenships of the world, and pushed that button, pulled that lever, touched that screen for John McCain and country first. Well, good on you, boys. Because that freed Barack Obama up to do the right thing with no political pressure whatsoever.
I bet you Rockefeller is just gnashing his teeth.
Oh, Rockefeller's eating his own liver. I mean, I'm sure you can. I'm sure if you popped into Jay Rock's apartment in D.C., you'd hear hear the sound and smell the odor of caramelizing onions, because liver always goes better with onions.
Oh yes, definitely. And, it's a little bit of karmic justice,
mm-hmm.
considering all the stuff that he's been in on.
Well, but you know what? It's not nearly as negative. Then let's understand that. That was a little bit of shameless gloating on my part, and I regret it already.
Hey, I don't.
Well, I do. But because let's be serious about this. Stopping these permits isn't putting anyone out of work. They're already squealing, we're going to have to go on welfare and can't have no new Chinese clothes from the Walmart. But it's not true. The mountain removers who are doing mountain removal now are going to keep doing mountain removal on the sites that are active. And that is a part of our continuing job to stop those. But the fact of the matter is, if you open a newspaper in West Virginia, Susan, and I'm not talking about good union jobs. They're not. But there are underground mines. Well, you remember Sago?
Yeah.
Well, the same folks that brought you Sago, a group called International Coal Group, ICG, they're advertising for all their worth for underground miners. They can't find enough of them. There is plenty of work to be had in real mines in West Virginia.
It's just that some of these mountain removers are too chicken shit to go underground that was good enough for my daddy and good enough for my granddaddy and good enough for my great-granddaddy. They're too chicken shit to do it.
Well, so am I, but then I'm claustrophobic, so.
Right. But see, when you go underground, and I'm not saying this, I'm repeating the words of people who have done underground mining.
Mm-hmm.
When you go underground, you take a responsibility, and you take a risk, and you take that risk upon yourself and alongside all the other people who are going underground, honorably, yeah. Decently.
Yeah.
And it is, to say the least, you know, I've heard wives of miners say that there is not a day that their husband goes off to work, because it's still mainly a man's world. There are female underground miners. I've known some. But it's mainly a man's world yet. When your husband goes off to work and you kiss him goodbye every morning you're not sure if you're going to see him that evening because it is still dangerous. And companies that don't have unions in their operations still do everything in their power to cut corners. And that's a hell of a way to live. But it pays pretty well. And it's honorable work. Work is honorable.
Yeah.
But those people who do that job, underground miners, and especially union miners, they do so honorably. On the other hand, when you go to work on a mountain removal job, you don't take much risk, and you impose the risk on, instead of on yourself, like an underground miner does, you impose that risk on the rest of your community. You set off the charge, you watch the dust and the toxins fly into the air, you stand upwind from it and wait for it to settle on everybody who's downwind. And you wait for it to flow onto people who are downstream. And thereby you externalize the risk instead of internalizing it, and that is dishonorable.
Yeah. I would imagine. Yeah, I don't know for sure. But I would think that a underground hard rock miner.
Now, this is not hard rock mining.
Well, I meant a coal miner.
Okay.
I'm sorry. An underground coal miner would probably consider a mountaintop remover as more or less something of a ditch digger.
The underground miners I do.
You know, not really a miner.
Yes.
And therefore not really.
Well, they're not miners, Susan.
Well, of course they're not.
They're demolition agents.
Well, to me, they're...
They're heavy equipment operators. And they toddle around on the moonscapes they create. And they turn loose poisons that the earth has effectively secreted inside itself. They turn it loose on the outside world. And if anybody dares complain, well, maybe you'll get a bullet through a window or a brick or your tires slashed or jack rocks thrown in your driveway.
Or it's their born thugs.
They certainly act that way.
I come from that stock, from the people of Appalachia. My Scots ancestors did. Well, hell, they were whiskey runners, you know, what can I say? They would have looked at a mountaintop removal miner as, well...
Not
I
much.
Guess the worst insult I could come up with is one my grandfather taught me. They would have looked at them like they were English. I'm sorry.
Yeah, with him being Scots and all. Hey, Susan, great talking to you. And listen, thank you so much. I know how much you, how much time you spent over at change.gov. I think you got seen.
Well, I'll be back. And I'm going to be,
Keep the hot on. Keep the hot on, though. This.
I just called Berkeley today. I'm going to be calling him back again.
And you know what? It takes courage to make that second, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, et cetera, call. And I'm so proud of you.
And keep it up on
Wyden, because they really are responsive to their constituents. Be nice.
Let me put it this way. I'm always nice, but I don't even ask them my name, recognize my voice.
Well, I sat and I saw people writing down names and numbers and pecking away at computers in various and sundry congressional offices, so I know they're taking the message.
Yeah, I go, hi, and they say, oh, hi, Susan, how are you? Oh, God.
That a girl.
That's embarrassing.
No, it's not embarrassing. That means they've learned, they recognize your voice, and they know that you're committed and you're passionate, and you actually give a damn about your government.
Yeah, and I know quite a few of them by first name. And
Keep after them. Let's see. You've got Congressman Wu.
Oh, yeah.
Is he signed on yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. And then you got your two senators, and they will support it the minute it's introduced. We just need somebody to introduce it.
Well, if Merkley's on the environmental committee, so I'm going to start yammering at him.
He's on Environment and Public Works, but he is the second most junior member thereof.
Well, any senator can sponsor a bill.
That's right.
So?
And it would make life a heck of a lot easier if it got introduced inside the committee than outside it.
Yeah, it's time to get your feet wet.
He's trying, you know, right now, the fact of the matter is, and I'm not being facetious, right now he's just trying to get a desk.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
No, I'm not, I'm really not kidding. I was there. He didn't have meeting space. They've got him down in the sub-basement.
Storage room B?
Yes. Yes, it really is. They have him in the sub-basement of the Dirksen Senate office building. And he doesn't even have a meeting room.
Doesn't he have, what happened to Smith's old office?
Somebody's in it. See, there's only 100.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
oh, yeah.
And this is interesting. There's only 100 senators, right?
Yep.
And every election cycle, there's a few changes. And that means every election cycle, there are all these hand trucks that go all over these Senate office buildings with furniture. When Guy and I were there the day after the election at the Russell Senate office building, there were hand trucks with desks on them and computer printers and the works to everything all over the building. As senators moved from old digs to newer big digs, better digs, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was in the Hart Senate office building last week, there's this one office, and it had the Great Seal of Minnesota outside it.
And it was...
And the name had been pried off the wall, and it was dark inside and empty. That was Norm Coleman's office.
Yeah.
And we don't know whose office it's going to be now. But because of... But I kid you not, because of that, there's a whole lot of backup. Because there's only 100 senators. It's not like, you know, the census changes and you add a congressman here and you add a congressman there. As long as there are 50 states, there are only 100 senators.
Yep.
And they have severely limited space. They've got Dirksen, and they've got Hart, and they've got Russell. And right now, your senator, Jeff Merkley,
is in storage.
Is in the sub-basement of the Dirksen Senate office building and happy to have a telephone and a naked bulb hanging from a wire in the ceiling. I am not kidding. Susan, it's great talking to you. I'm gonna try to hit a few more lines now.
Okay, hon. Love to Agnes.
All right.
And everybody else. Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan, who truly has been wearing the heck out of her Oregon congressional delegation. And I tell you what, I'm so proud of her, I could just bust. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
How are we today?
Oh, we are so happy.
Oh, I'm just filling sandbags over here. Apparently, Michelle Bachmann's calling Minnesota an armed revolutionary conflict. So.
She is doing that.
Yeah, so we're going to have to take down Minnesota. I got some insurgents in there already, friends of mine, that will fight along our side. And well, don't worry, it'll be swift, and we'll take them out real quick. But nah, I'm just kidding. But they're crazy. What the hell? You know, I go to sleep, I wake up, volcanoes are going off, you know, when we shouldn't be monitoring them, you know.
Oh, that's right. That's a very astute observation. We should not have been... Why are we monitoring? And you think Godzilla from Wasilla is glad that we got some volcano monitoring?
Hell, she's probably in her bunker. She thought it was a nuclear attack by Russia or some stupid crap like that. Who knows what the hell her problem is?
Oh, they finally decided to set the big one off, and they're coming to get us.
Her and Bachmann, they're like almost twin sisters to me, because they kind of talk in the same dialect and say the same stupid crap.
They speak crazy as a native first language.
Seriously, I mean, what the hell's wrong with these people? You know, wait, didn't you just get your butt handed to you? What makes you think that you guys? You know, yeah,
but I'm cute.
Man, the country gave these Republicans 50-plus years of allowing them with their, what is the word, anarcho-randianism?
Anarcho-randianism, yes.
Anarcho-randianism, yeah, that's a great word.
Brought to you by our buddy Tosh, by the way. Got to give credit where credit is due.
All right. It's a great word, and it is one of those things. But, like, they don't understand for some reason or another, but they've failed. Like, don't try to bring back the recently deceased. It's dead. It doesn't work. It's failed. Just stop. So we let them run around, and we let them do their thing, and, you know, now they're talking. You know, we were talking about revolution, and we still haven't gotten it, but at least we're starting to get some change, which I guess in its own way is the kind of revolution that we're talking about. We're talking about, like, that kind of, you know, like, change. You know, for the better, and for, you know, that's a revolution. Revolution doesn't have to be violent or destructive or anything like that. It certainly may be destructive to negative, you know, elements, and that's certainly, you know, sure, you know, I mean, you know, be destructive to the cancers, but, you know, my God, to them, everything, you know, everything.
To the barricades!
Well, everything left of Pat Buchanan is liberal, and it's just, I mean, my God, they are just out of their minds. What the hell are we doing wasting federal tax dollars? Why do you want your tax dollars monitoring bees?
Why, yes, 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 I do.
Yeah, I think I do.
Hey,
yeah.
did you hear that there's a bee going to, not only they are, I just have to throw this out for you, Albert, because it's, you know, another one of those cool things. In the midst of all this chaos and misery and the right-wingers absolutely losing what passes for minds in those thin gray settlings between their ears. In addition to the garden that Michelle Obama has said that she wants and has started on the White House grounds, they're going to have bees.
Really?
One of the guys that works at the White House is a beekeeper, and he's bringing his happy little hive to go and be happy little bees in Michelle's happy little garden. I like that.
Sweet. That is awesome. And I'll tell you what, you know, just, you know, not for nothing, but to everybody out there who is concerned about this issue, please contact your local city officials and let them know, you know, about this issue. I'm sure people have heard about it. I mean, you know, I don't feel like such a lunatic anymore for, you know, sitting at the gas station and somebody saying something, oh, yeah, you hear about the beat. You know, now people do. They at least around here, they kind of, yeah, what the hell's going on with that? What's going on with that? What have you heard? You know, like, it's starting to become, you know, something to talk about other than weather or something like that. And, you know, but let your local officials know. You know, just all you need to let them know is of the bee crisis, of the colony collapse disorder, and just the mere fact of, well, certainly GM foods. You know, we've all seen how they stop working correctly after they go and buzz around on those GMO frankenfoods. There have been a number of studies demonstrating that, which is why now I think Europe has completely outlawed. I'm pretty sure they're there now. I mean, I don't think that a lot of European countries.
Austria and Hungary.
Austria and Hungary yesterday, I believe, or day before, reasserted their rights to ban Roundup Ready Corn.
Good.
Because Roundup Ready Corn is the only GM food, I think, that's allowed in Europe right now.
They need to stop. But anyway, contact your local officials and tell them, please, during a time of economic crisis, during a time of colony collapse disorder, of a very important, little insect population there, please let us not spray broadleaf all over everything. You know, let's let the dandelions run wild for a little while. You know, if you don't like them, mow it.
Mow it.
If you don't like it, mow it. Period. If you
get
don't
a push,
yellow,
yeah, get a push mower.
Yeah.
Get a push mower.
Get some goats or something.
Goats? You know, goats like dandelions.
Yeah, everybody, people like dandelions, you know, all those posh, you know, I don't watch TV, and I just have to share this, and oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have TV. Every time I get near somebody who has TV, and, you know, we surf the channels or what have you, I sit there and I watch it, and I'm like, my God, I'm so happy I don't pay money for this just garbage. It's just refuse. They have these people, I don't know if you've heard it, like it's basically a, what the hell are they called? A reality show version of Sex in the City, but like New York Wives or something it's called.
I don't want to know.
No, you don't want to know. It is vapid. It is a train wreck, and they have no idea of what a kind of a train wreck it is. It's just the most astounding thing. I was just shocked and just appalled and amazed and grotesque and gross. Oh, it was just horrible.
Yeah, I know.
Waste my money.
Speaking of television real quick, I sat down and caught up with my Life on Mars watching last night.
Mm-hmm.
They, of course, I find a television show that I like, they cancel it.
Yeah, of course.
And now they're racing to the season ending finish line so that they can tie everything up in a nice tidy little knot. And I'm pretty sure they're getting close to the point where the main character steps out of the shower and says hello to J.R. Ewing or something.
Yeah, well, that's how the Bush years were for me, so.
All too true.
It was intentional.
Oh, and by the way, you talk about the honeybees, Albert. The fact of the matter is, we had a story the other day, the EPA, oh, there they are again. They've got their white horse back, and they're riding to the rescue. They've announced a full-scale investigation of the fine folks down at Bayer Crop Sciences in Institute, West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
where we came within a gnat's ass of being Bhopal last August.
Really?
Yeah, it's the last place in, only in West Virginia. Hell, it's a bunch of hillbillies, what the hell. Only in West Virginia are they allowed to still manufacture methyl isocyanate. And they had a huge explosion and fire.
What? Can we not forget for a second that Bayer made all that during the World War II? The delousing of Auschwitz and all those other places?
Yeah, I know.
Can we not forget that?
Yeah, let's not forget that. And in fact, it turns out that Bayer Crop Sciences, you, and like I said, I brought this up because you brought up the honeybees. Bayer Crop Sciences, Albert, are the fine folks who helped bring you bee colony collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Because one of their insecticides is a neurotoxin.
Yes, mm-hmm.
That is the apiary equivalent of LSD.
Really?
The bees get into it, and then they fly around. Dude, I can't find the hive. My homing system don't work no more.
I've totally dreamed this before. I'm tripping. Yeah. Whoa.
I'm so wasted.
I've read about what these, it basically disorientates.
Right, and it was the place in Institute, West Virginia that made this crap that blew up, spewing all manner of filth into the air.
You know, Bob, I got to say something. I frequent a few forums here and there where I have the time to, and one of the forums I do is more of an alternative science forum. And of course, there's a guy. There's global warming deniers on there.
Yes, of course.
And, you know, you bring up the bee thing, and this brings me right into this, because, you know, they said, oh, yeah, you know, and Discovery Channel's produced, you know, pumping out. Now, I have plenty of gripes with the Discovery Channel. The Discovery Channel of today, folks, is not the Discovery Channel of what it used to be. I mean, that channel used to be awesome. I mean, that channel was great.
When the Discovery Channel is running features about ghosts, well, enough said.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you know, anyhow, I mean, you know, I mean, it's all like home improvement crap, and it's like, man, you know, you sell your house and flip your home and all this other junk. Anyway, but, you know, like, Discovery Channel was always, to me, it was always a science thing, but back in the day when it used Beyond Tomorrow, remember that show? Anyway, that was such a
good
show. You know, cool new technology out and stuff that let me imagine that when I finally made it to the age I am now and have a flying car. But anyway,
Sucker!
Yeah, I know.
Only if it runs on hydrocarbons.
Yeah, exactly. And so anyway, you know, and he kind of summed up the whole little mentality of the global warming denier. And I don't have I tend to be a little bit more scientific, and science is a method. It's not like a religion. And some people, even on the science end of it, they start to act like it's a religion, and it's infallible and all that other stuff. It's not quite there, and it's not, should never be. It should always be something that's, you know, having its own revolution. Science should constantly be under a state of revolution because it should be under constant discovery and learning and seeing things. And, you know, I mean, not forgetting all the things of the old, but, you know, at the same time, looking for the new answers, not to, you know, and they do frame ideologies, and they do this. I mean, if you say they don't, well, okay. But anyway, and, you know, you got the two camps, and you got the people that say it's CO2, and I'm not worried about CO2 raising the temperatures of the Earth. I'm just not. Just based on the output of the sun and all that other stuff. Now, no. I'm not going to say that it's a good idea to do this. My problem with CO2 is not that it's greenhouse gas effects. My problem with CO2 is the fact that it acidifies the ocean.
Well, there is that.
And that is the most horrifying thing I can imagine. You know, I tend to see synchronicities and all these other, you know, symbolic things about, you know, just human beings and the planet that we live on. I mean, just and my favorite little trivia question is, you know, the human body and the planet Earth contain about the same ratio of water. And, you know, 75% covers 70% of the Earth, and our bodies are made up of 70% water. And I don't know, I always find that as just an interesting little, you know, side quip. And I
macro
about,
versus,
you know,
micro, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if we acidify our, you know, that's one of the problems, and that's another reason why we see all this cancer, you know, is because we're sucking in too many acids. And that raises the, you know, or lowers the pH of our blood. And, well, cancers tend to love low pH. You know, they tend to not do so well.
Yeah, and you've opened the door on something. That macro versus micro thing continues to amaze me, Albert, because you ever notice that atoms look like solar systems?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, oh, without a doubt. It's one of those. It's
cells look like Pacific atolls.
Yeah, oh, they look like, and then sometimes cells look like galaxies, too.
There you go.
Cells look like solar systems. They have a nucleus, and they have the planet. I mean, yeah, it might not be as, you know, as symmetrical or anything like that, but they still have all the components, and cells are really neat. Man, I'll tell you what, you better watch. Watching some shows, now that I know what I know, and I've been through what I've been through, and, you know, I see what I see. When I watch some of these, like, micro medical shows, when they're, like, studying, like, living blood cells, and, like, through the body and stuff.
And stuff that regrows limbs that they print on Epson inkjet printers. Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you, there's something crazy going on in our bodies that we just so totally take for granted, and we act like, you know, Who Wants to Be, the next pop star is the big show. Did you see that video of those girls crying about that? Oh my God, that's so sad. Anyway, but, oh, it was just horrible. But, anyway.
That Taylor Swift, she's so beautiful.
I don't even, he's horrible, he doesn't even shave. They were crying, like literally crying. Then it was funny, it was actually interesting in a psychological way, you know, like if you're being an anthropologist and you're just sitting there studying people,
Yeah, you're kind of sitting there watching Krippendorf's stride.
Exactly. Yeah, well, kind of. You saw like one or two of the girls who you could tell were the more vocal of the group, and they got really upset, and the rest of their friends kind of were like, they had moments of like, are they kidding? And then all of a sudden, no, I'm upset too. It was just funny, and that's fake how fake people are. Anyway, this guy sits there and he starts talking about, oh, yeah, and humanity's evil. You see, and I've been hearing shows on, they've been talking about Russia, and they've been talking about Bosnia and these African countries, and the BBC likes to do this. Like, and I don't know if England's ever really done what the BBC likes to say that other countries need to do. Like, when they need to draw into account for their own, you know, they always say Germany has taken into account for its history and made, you know, apologies and concessions, and they've, you know, promised to never, ever, 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 ever do such a thing again. And, you know, like, they've, you know, totally to educate people and, like, never go down that path again. And they'll always say to, like, oh, Russia hasn't, you know, acknowledged its past, and they certainly haven't. And, you know, they say these things, and it just made me micro-macro right back into it. You know, the United States will probably, I hope, that's the thing about liberals, is we like to sit there and go, wait, man, we've done some evil things. We need to take account to that's why these people don't like us, you know. And then they say that we hate America. Because we say, hey, you know, you did something wrong. It's like, it would be like, you know, hey, you know, why'd you crash the car? I let you take it out. You went out drinking. You crashed the car.
You hate America. Why do you hate America?
Yeah, it's just like, are you kidding me? in the corner. Anyway, you know, he sits there and he continues how we need, you know, how they want to tax us and put carbon tax.
Oh, Albert, I've so got that story.
Oh, it's one of those. Isn't it one of those carbon tax? You know what?
The Obama carbon tax. That Muslim communist is going to tax every American right out of their houses.
You know,
it's already been said to me. You think I'm kidding? It's already been said to me.
That's horrible. What you say to them is this: if we do what we're supposed to do, there won't be any carbon to tax. What carbon from a windmill? What carbon from a solar panel? What carbon from, you know,
geothermal, spegs?
Geothermal or plasma instability device or any of these other, you know, just amazing technologies that
black silicon.
Black silicone and the black light technology, which speaks solar system, is apparently what this guy does to hydrogen. There's a certain type of hydrogen, whatever. He makes the electron move closer than it naturally does, and when this happens, it releases an enormous amount of light in the UV range, and it's a ton of energy. And apparently they're making generators. You can go look it up, black light technology or whatever like that. And some people say it works, some people say it doesn't. Not for less, I'm going to pay attention to it because it's something new and it's something that, hey, maybe it does work. How do you know? Maybe it's...
I love watching smart people try new things.
Exactly. Not everything has to be, you know, work. But I'll tell you what, I've seen some people demonstrate some machines that, boy, oh, boy.
Alexander Graham Bell was working on a hearing assistance device for the deaf when he dumped some acid on his hand, not the good kind, and screamed, Watson, come here, I need you. Watson was nowhere where he could hear him, but he heard it through Alexander Graham Bell's little hearing assistance device for the deaf, whose other end he had left in the workshop. And Watson went there. Yeah, boss?
Oh. Yeah. Well, look,
telephone.
For frack's sake, look at Nikolai Tesla.
Well, Tesla, oh my God, Tesla.
He was trying to send energy over the ocean. Transmitting energy, you know, just by the air. And now they're doing that. Have you seen that?
Yes.
The guys at MIT, they've done that now. So, you know, like, and it that took a while. Man, we should have listened to that guy a little more. Even though he said he was getting his thing from telepathy or whatever, from angels and aliens or whatever, but whatever. You know, if you're getting it from aliens, I know they don't exist. I mean, if the thing works, if you're sitting there floating around, you know, man, maybe you got some technology. I don't know. So anyway, you know, I sit there and I'm like, you know, and I brought up the fact of, and I actually had to respond to this guy because he was calling, you know, like, oh, how dare they say human liberals think humans are evil? And I know what you're good. I know, because you know what I'm going to say. Humans are evil. We are the most evil thing on this planet.
We're the bad monkeys.
Exactly. We created the word evil. We are evil. We're good too. I'm not saying, I mean, we're good.
One side of us went out and became happy little bonobos. And the other side became us.
Yeah, or something like that.
But wait, Albert. I won't even say that human beings are evil. You know what I say instead, and I think it is far more damning? Human beings are screw-ups. We're screw-ups. And every now and then we have a happy screw-up, but mostly we have screw-up screw-ups. You know, we have happy little screw-ups when we figure out things like love thy neighbor as thyself, and then we kill the guy who comes up with the idea. And that applies to the two guys who came up with the idea. Two guys came up with love thy neighbor as thyself. Two guys came up with love thy enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Socrates and Yeshua the brown-skinned Nazarene carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, both of them were executed by the state.
Mm-hmm.
So we come up with some happy screw-ups where we don't have to be the monkeys waving the thigh bone of some other monkey dancing around the monolith.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the time we spend coming up with screw-up screw-ups. I offer you Mr. Gatling, who invented a gun that would shoot a lot of guns really fast at the same time. And he was really impressed with it because he said, look what I've invented. This thing will mow human beings down like a reaper going through wheat. No way would anybody wage war and use this thing.
Uh-huh.
It is too terrible a weapon. The government promptly said, we'll take a, we want a contract for 1,000. Come forward a little bit. Dude named Alfred Nobel. Invents an explosive, so explosive that nobody in their right mind would ever use it on another monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other monkey governments said, we want it by the boatload.
Yep.
Then there's J. Robert Oppenheimer, who was fond of quoting the Bhagavad Gita, lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. Wow, this is an awesomely powerful thing. Let's just threaten the Japanese with it. And Harry Truman said, oh, hell no, I'm going to drop it on them little yeller bastards. There you go. Bad monkeys.
The line,
bad monkeys.
Yeah, bad monkeys. No, but that's the point. I mean, you know, I happen to think that we have to accept the fact that, you know, we can't just think we're great without also accepting we're bad. You know, if we don't accept the totality of ourselves, you know, we're going to go nowhere. We're going to stay in, we're going to become stagnant. So, I mean, I made my comment regarding that we are indeed evil, and we're as evil as we are good, you know, and that's just apparent, and it's just, I mean, that's obvious. And so somebody else came up with a statement regarding, you know, oh, yeah, well, I just heard a news report of some guy that got bit by a tiger. And then they have to, I didn't hear about what happened to the guy, but I heard that the tiger needed to be checked for human diseases. And I said, well, wait a minute. There's a tiger, there's 1,000 of them left on the planet because human beings wanted tiger skinned underwear, or they wanted to wear a cool tiger tooth on a frickin', you know, leather lanyard or some crap. Mm-hmm. And some idiot at a zoo, I mean, one of these idiots that thinks that they could go and pet the tiger behind the four cages and the moat and everything else.
Yeah, if you've got a moat and four cages, that's a pretty good idea. You shouldn't, you know, please do not pet the tiger.
Who the hell, I mean, what kind of parent doesn't teach their kid that a tiger's dangerous? I don't understand that.
Okay, I may have told this story on myself before, but it became a sort of urban legend inside the halls of CNN radio decades ago. I used to work the midnight shift, Albert. And at the end of the midnight shift, because, you know, you can never get your head in the right place to sleep right if you're on the midnight shift. Ask anybody who's ever worked rotating shift work. You just can't. And so at the end of the midnight shift, it's like being at the tail end of a really bad drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And so my last newscast was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I should have already packed up and gone home. And news people are a weird lot in the first place. Let's get that out of the way.
Okay.
My relief came in and found me hunched over my keyboard, laughing uncontrollably and weeping. This is back when I was a very young bad monkey. Okay.
Okay.
And, you know, Bob, what? And I just pointed at the screen. And what was on my screen was the story of a couple of kids who had gone to the gone into the Bronx Zoo, broken in.
I remember this.
And climbed and climbed the fence of the polar bear enclosure. And only one little delinquent came out. And he said the kid's last words were, "Go get help. He's biting me hard." And at 5 o'clock in the morning, at the end of the midnight shift, that devastated me. And like I said, this is from my days as a young, unenlightened bad monkey. Bad primate. I'm demeaning the monkeys. Bad primate, Bob.
Toilet-trained primate. We'll just call you toilet-trained.
And my relief read it and started laughing uncontrollably at that line. Not at the circumstances, but at that line. Go get help. He's biting me hard. Because there's all this stuff with the language that goes through. I know, nobody in the chat room is laughing. But the idea that polar bears nibble.
Nosh. That's like playing with gasoline, and when you hold, he's lighting on fire. Holy crap!
It's the wake me up before you go go scene from Zoolander.
Yes, exactly. They were gasoline fighting. I mean, come on. I mean, not for nothing. This reminds me of the Bill Hicks thing. Young man on acid thought he could fly, jumped out of a building.
Dumbass!
What a tragedy. Yeah, no, good. The world lost a moron. We lost a moron. How are you going to make it? Oh, I don't know. I mean,
peace be upon him.
As Bill Hicks says, if you think you can fly, do like the ducks and start from the ground.
Right.
I mean, you know, did you see, speaking of guys that think they can fly, did you see that guy on that Muslim TV freak the frick out because the host said that he fly and he couldn't see the future and he freaked out, and that was really funny. He did fly, but he did it really close to the ground. Anyway, there's something to be said for the stupid things that stupid primates do, you know, and I mean, not for that, man, if the only purpose of their life is to be a lesson to others, well, at least they served a purpose. But, you know, I don't want to hear about somebody saying that a tiger is evil or a polar bear is evil.
Because it did what polar bears and tigers do.
Exactly. I mean, at least the guys that go swimming with sharks, with, you know, 50 pounds of bloody tuna hanging around their waist, you know, when they do get bit, or the guys that think they can, you know, like, read the shark and they can tell when it's going to bite and stuff. You know, eventually they get bit. They make a mistake, you know. You can only jump around so much nitroglycerin before you're going to drop one, and then you're in trouble. And, you know, so if you're juggling hand grenades.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, there's an old Warner Brothers cartoon out there. Where Daffy Duck is trying to break into Bugs' act. And he's got this gig. He says, "First, I drink a gallon of gasoline.
Yeah.
Then I strap dynamite to my body. Then I light a match and boom. Ah, that's a great act. Yeah, I know, but I can only do it once."
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
if you do the Russian dynamite circle, sooner or later you're going to get caught.
Seriously. I mean, seriously. I don't understand that. And so, you know,
the law of averages is a law because it acts in a merciless fashion. It's in the nature of law. I mean, this is way back to all that Platonic stuff and about the nature of justice and everything. Natural laws operate, and I mean, when I say merciless, Albert, I'm not saying merciless as in, you know, cruel. Natural laws, Boyle's gas law, the law of gravity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Natural laws operate in a merciless fashion.
Mm-hmm.
The law of gravity, if you toss a brick into the air and a baby, the law of gravity acts the same on both.
Mm-hmm.
In a merciless fashion. Laws of nature operate in a merciless fashion. So too with tigers and polar bears. No matter how much goodwill you have, and no matter how charming that video was of the lion that the guys bought at Harrods, but it got too big, so they took it to Africa, and then they went back and found it, and Whitney Houston was playing in the background, and I will always love you, and all of that. Lions, that was atypical lion behavior. It was outside the realm of the natural behavior of a lion. And in a way, I kind of hate to see those videos come out, because that was like the most popular YouTube video of the year last year. The guy getting loved on by the lion.
Oh, he was lucky, boy, wasn't he?
Yeah, because, you know, that lion could have knocked him down with just went right for the throat and, you know, dead primate.
Well, his friends could have said, that was the thing that amazed me, was that the other lions were cool. That was the thing that really, I mean, yeah, that was cool that he did that, but I could see an animal complete like that with a brain the size of that remembering them. But the fact that that lion's, complete posture towards those people made all the other lions act in accordance with the
right.
way he was acting.
Well, you know, I think it's pretty well established now that, oh, what's their names? That did the Lions and Tigers and Bears Oh My act in Vegas, and one of them got eaten.
Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah, Siegfried and Roy. Zager and Evans, you know, I couldn't remember. it turns out that the tiger flipped out on Siegfried or Roy.
Mm.
Not because it suddenly lost its mind on Siegfried or Roy, but because it was put on... in defense posture by a flipped out lady with a funny hat in the first row. And that it was actually moving into a defense posture for, you know, the alpha tiger, either Siegfried or Roy.
Interesting.
And, you know, and you can, you, you know, those lines can be blurred, but natural, the laws of nature act mercilessly.
This is the difference. I mean, even these guys who sit there and they take these cubs and they spit in there, give them their scent, and they raise them up from their cubs and they take care of them, they sleep with them, and they got all that stuff. Even those guys get attacked. So what makes you think that you can go into a freaking zoo
and pet the tiger?
Exactly. I mean, you know, like, yeah, right, you can go to, the guy went to Africa, but at least he kind of maybe knew or whatever. But, you know, the thing is that
if you go to a petting zoo, they don't even bring you a full-grown goat. They bring a baby goat. They bring a baby deer.
Yeah. Well, who hasn't seen the video of the ram hitting the little kid in the butt because, you know, it just was triggered by a stimuli that said, oh, you want to fight? Boom, you know. Remember, you ever seen that?
Oh, sure.
Headbutts the kid. You know, the kid is just picking up a piece of corn or whatever. The ram thinks he wants to headbutt, and so let's headbutt.
Well, head down, headbutt, you know.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's evil. I think that's just them doing their thing. But the thing is maybe human, I think we're a little bit evil.
Again, I come back to the central theme, Albert. We are screw-up primates.
Yeah.
Not evil primates. Screw-up primates.
I don't know if you... Yeah,
you know, the first cooked food was probably not a deliberate act. And the first primate to eat the first cooked food burned his little lips trying. He screwed up.
You know, it might have been carrion, too, that got caught in a fire.
Well, right, or you know, lightning strikes the tree falls over, lands on a possum... Oh, it ain't moving. I think I'll eat it. Yeah. Okay. Hey, Albert, I got to run along, brother. But
All right, brother.
another great one.
Always, brother, always. You take care.
You too. Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
Brother Albert in Far Wisconsin. I think I know who this is. It's this guy, James.
So I'm a polar bear, and I'm sitting in the zoo. I was sitting there for like 9 years. Looking over that fence day after day after day and saying, just one time, sucker, just one time.
Once.
You come over that fence.
I dare you.
Hey, Bob.
What's going on, brother?
Hey, just thought I'd call in and say hello to everybody and let everybody know that we're planning on program tomorrow if we get a couple of things tweaked in the studio. And we're looking forward to the return.
As is everybody who shares their time listening to this network, Guy James, I tell you the truth. I'm one, I've gotten a little, hey, when's Guy coming back? I mean, you're okay and all, Bob, but when's Guy coming back? Yeah. Really good for the ego, those emails, I got to tell you.
Go on. I want to thank you for all your help, and I want to thank everybody for their thoughts throughout this time for Bess and I, and it's getting back to normal, and we're very much looking forward to getting back with the program. Got lots to talk about, I'm sure, but I will make it tomorrow. I really do.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and you know you've got a couple of months worth of pent up stuff to deal with.
Well,
you're going to be a while getting through this, guy. Now, don't get in a hurry. Don't think you've got to auctioneer the auctioneer your way for the program. I got one lousy Republican, two lousy Republicans. What do I hear? I got three lousy Republicans.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. Plenty of time.
That's true. Plenty of time. We're going to have lots of time to talk about Republicans from now on. I actually wouldn't even have to talk about them. They're doing such a good job themselves.
Oh, I know. And I know that you've been keeping up even in the midst of all that you've been having to deal with. I closed the program last night with Michelle Bachmann calling for armed revolution in the United States. When you see something like that, Guy, does that surprise you?
No, it does not. Nothing that woman says would surprise me. And that does remind me, perhaps everybody's heard it, but I think I'll have a good Michelle joke to tell tomorrow. Certainly made me laugh the other night about choked on my dinner while somebody told about Michelle. So I'll have to do that tomorrow. Nothing that woman could say was what the hell is wrong with people in Minnesota?
I want people in Minnesota armed and dangerous on this issue.
Yeah. The president makes a small, insignificant gaffe the other night on Leno show. And she cranks them out by the ton almost every day. And so does Boner or Mr. Boehner and the rest of them. It just doesn't seem to make any difference. I love it. But anyway, I just wanted to give my regards to everybody. I want to give our thanks and appreciation to everybody. And let everybody know we'll be back tomorrow. And we've got a couple audio things to iron out, but I think we'll get there. And I am really looking forward to sitting in the studio chair and talking to all of our Head On Radio Network friends tomorrow.
I know you are, because we've been in correspondence all this time. And, yeah. You know, you might, I got to say, I think you're a heck of a husband. You got to be. You've done great. You've just been great as you've worked with Bess and everything. And, you know, there's nothing like watching real liberals display real family values, and I'm not trying to trade on that, but it's reality.
Nope.
I mean, there are times that I have to bug out of this chair and miss a show because, you know, we got to take the boy to the hospital for an appendectomy or something.
Yeah.
That's the reality of family values, not this phony baloney that the right wing pumps out. You know, we got to blow up more mountains for the families. No.
And by the way, did you get the email I sent you today about the hold on that?
Yes, I did. We've
my
been.
God, you we, are one effective guy.
No, that's entirely on my wife. Yeah.
She's a whole lot better looking than you, and I can understand why she'd have a little more influence. But my goodness, that was quick.
It was amazing. You know, Lisa Jackson, the administrator of the EPA. Came and saw 12,000 young people sitting in one room at Power Shift and had to take into account the fact that it's their future that these coal companies are destroying.
My call went south there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I still have you, Guy? I think
we lost our call for some reason.
I'll just shoot you a note in the chat room.
But
do I still have you back?
I don't think so.
Oh, I think we lost our call.
There we go.
There we are. Are we back?
I don't know. Do you hear me? Something's delaying the process. Guy, I look forward to talking with you. And I can't wait for 3 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow.
Are you okay?
This is strange. But Guy James will be with you. 3 o'clock Eastern time, live tomorrow. Everybody come to the chat room. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Everybody come to the chat room and welcome Guy back to the chair. Because I tell you what, when Guy James is not there and in the fight, we know it. We note his absence, and he is sorely missed. But things have settled down enough that he can get back behind the microphone, and I say hallelujah. Absolutely. So Guy James, 3 p.m. tomorrow, Wednesday. Be there or be nowhere. And the chat room will hold a lot of people, so everybody making a special effort. This includes the overseas people. Guy's been gone a while, okay? So be in the chat room, 3 o'clock tomorrow. We'll finish working out the audio issues. And just to let you know, we've been working hard to solve some technical issues to get Guy back. And we got a long way down the road. We've got just a few more steps on the road to take, and then everything is all fixed and ready to go. So a simple question. Where did the last 2 hours go? This is the little miracle that is that you guys make of this program. If you're sitting, for instance, in a dentist's chair, 3 hours takes a long, long time. 15 minutes in a dentist's chair, if you're, you know, conscious, is an eternity. 50 minutes in algebra class in ninth grade, trying to take a test for which little Bob was ill-prepared, takes a long time. But here on the 24th of March, 2009, 2 hours with you guys goes by in the blink of an eye because of all you bring. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, sounds whisper. Don't you know, you're talking about a revolution, sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds peaceful. Hungry people gonna rise up, get their share. Hungry people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Talking about the revolution. It's finally the day.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. As the contract between workers represented by the Communications Workers of America and AT&T heads for expiration on April 4th, little progress is being made at the bargaining table. On Monday, the workers gave the CWA bargaining committee the power to call a strike if the company fails to accept a quality contract. 88% of the 125,000 workers represented by the union approved that strike option. Any action, though, needs to be approved by the CWA Executive Committee. The battle between Canadian auto workers and Chrysler continues to heat up. Jesse Russell reports.
With Chrysler placing the threat of pulling out of Canada on the table, talks continued Tuesday between the U.S. car company and the union representing workers. The Canadian auto workers recently reached a deal with General Motors that would save the company $1 billion in pension and health care payments. The CAW wants Chrysler to stick to that deal, but Chrysler is demanding more givebacks from workers. The company told a parliamentary committee it would shutter Canadian production plants if the country doesn't offer aid and the auto workers don't offer further concessions.
Unionized firms do not fail at any higher rates than non-union firms.
Economic Policy Institute economist Josh Bivens. Bivens says economic research is clear. Increased unionization does not hurt employment or the economy.
The state-of-the-art academic research examining the causal effects of unionization on what happens to firms, and it finds out that there is no causal effect. They do not go out of business or grow more slowly in terms of employment than their non-union peers.
A new report from the University of Michigan's John DiNardo clearly debunks the big business argument that more unionization causes more unemployment or more frequent business failures.
Essentially, this research really puts the lie to some overblown claims made by those opposed to the Employee Free Choice Act regarding opposing unionization on the alleged grounds that unions increase unemployment.
In fact, Bivens says unions can be good for the economy, in part because they reduce economic inequality. United Steelworkers President Leo Girard testified Tuesday before the U.S. House Trade Subcommittee and called for a national commitment to rebuild America clean and green. Girard says climate change is the challenge of our generation, and America must lead the effort. Girard says the development of green manufacturing should be the centerpiece of the U.S. effort.
Here's today's economic report. According to a new study, nearly 1 in 5 U.S. workers are uninsured. That's an increase from fewer than 1 in 7 since the mid-1990s. The numbers come from a new report by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which discovered that 26.9 million workers were uninsured by the middle of the current decade. That's up 6 million from the mid-1990s, when the number was 20.7 million.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hour three in the midst of a hope for a cleaner, greener, less toxic America is underway. 6 minutes past the hour of 8 p.m. here on the East Coast. Awfully glad to hear from Guy James just a couple of minutes ago. And I want to put in a good word, if you'll just tolerate me for a second. I want to put in a word about CityNet.
Now, you know, you hear those ads run from time to time. And you may not pay a lot of attention to them. But if you are in the area that is served by CityNet and you've already got broadband, why you're not getting your telephones through them is beyond me. It is a good competitive rate. But I'll tell you what sells me on CityNet is the service. Guy was talking about the tech work that we had done today. The fact of the matter is, starting at about 10 a.m. and going through about 3 p.m., a customer service agent for CityNet was right there side by side with Guy and me as we tried to sort out some telephony problems. And these were telephony problems brought on by virtue of the fact that since we are the horn, but we are also the barn, the broadcast radio network, we have to make technologies that aren't intended to do things they're not intended to do. For instance, we create connections literally all over the globe using CityNet technology that other people use $15,000 pieces of equipment to accomplish. That's what we do because that's what we have to do. And I just want you to know that if you are in the area served by CityNet, you will do yourself a favor. I say this with no reservation whatsoever. And you know I don't just throw endorsements out there. I don't come on the air and say, you know, I got me a pocket full of gold, and you need to buy gold now from Alan Stanford. He's a heck of a gold salesman, that Alan. You know, this ain't right-wing radio. If I tell you that I like something or that I think something is worth having, it's because I personally have had some level of experience with it and have found it to be a good thing. And so I do encourage you, if you want the absolute best customer service that a human being can have in 2009, and you are within the area served by CityNet, and you can get their telephony, and you've already got broadband, do it. It is rock solid. And it is the, I kid you not, because I've talked to a lot of people in Bangalore and Sri Lanka and Malaysia and the few other tech support jobs that remain in the United States. And I tell you in all sincerity, the guys at CityNet are the best I have ever seen, the best with which I have ever dealt. So with that in mind, if you've some business to give, consider CityNet. Phones are open at 877-443-2366, 304-658-3333. That's CityNet doing a great job again. Jump in with your thoughts. I want to share a couple with you to sort of temper the joyful moment, if you will, of seeing the EPA and Lisa Jackson, the administrator, do the right thing. First of all, we being liberals are polite and decent people. And with that in mind, I encourage you, decently and politely, to say thank you. We've had occasion on this program to hear what bad manners sound like over the last couple of programs. But we are well-mannered, for we are liberal. And I'm going to give you a phone number. This is the phone number for the White House switchboard. It is area code 202-456-1111. And I encourage you to call and give a word of thanks. You know, I can't imagine what it must be like to work that switchboard and hear right-wing horses' rear ends day in and day out. You tell him I'm down here in busted knuckle, and I don't want to be no communist like he wants me to be. You know, Beck watchers and Limbaugh listeners and Savage Weenie followers and so forth. It's got to be a hell of a job. 202-456-1111 and politely and sincerely thank the Obama administration for doing the right thing by Appalachia. I'm going to do it. I hope you will, too. Because, you see, it's an uphill battle. Already. Because West Virginians aren't worth a tinker's damn to the governor of West Virginia. With the news that is out, our governor, Joe Manchin, is literally, as we speak, on his way to try to twist the arm of Barack Obama and get the president to allow the destruction of West Virginia to continue. Talk about peeing on somebody's parade. Thanks, Joe Manchin, you dick! They've released a statement at the governor's office. After learning about the letters sent today by the EPA regarding mining, lying bastards! It's not mining! After learning about the letters sent today by the EPA regarding mining, I discussed concerns about the impact of this decision with the head of our State Department of Environmental Protection. Lying again! It is not the Department of Environmental Protection. I have here proof that it's not the Department of Environmental Protection. It is the Department of Environmental Permitting. It is a shameless prostitute for the people who blow up our homes and our mountains and our communities and poison our children. As a result of those discussions, this evening I spoke with Nancy Sutley, chair of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. She's been gracious enough to meet with me tomorrow in Washington to discuss the issues raised by today's decision by the EPA. I look forward to meeting with her and sharing our concerns and finding out the intent of this ruling. Well, Joe, the intent of this ruling is to make the coal companies stop blowing up Appalachia long enough to find out exactly how poisonous, how destructive, how devastating what they're doing is, because the Army Corps of Engineers and West Virginia's own Department of Environmental Permitting hasn't been doing its job because you don't want them to do their job, you sleazy gut bucket. I believe the interpretation of the letters may be different than the intent, and I'm confident that reasonable people can come together to find a solution where there might be differences. I will share with them everything our state is doing to meet our nation's energy needs. Kiss my butt! And the jobs that are dependent on this industry. Less than 4,000 of them. I will do everything I possibly can to fight for every job in West Virginia. You just won't fight for the children, Joe, you dirty little son of a bitch! You go and break bread with West Virginians for life! But when it comes to the rubber meat in the road, you don't have the courage to stand up for children who live at the foot of mountaintop removal operations. You don't have the courage to stand up for babies in the womb being toxified by mercury pumped into the air by the burning of coal from West Virginia. And for that, I call you out. I call you out as a very, very bad, bad man. A man who has no reverence for life. Gonna go try to twist the... And see, oh, God, I hope, I hope, I hope, oh, God, I hope that Barack Obama sends a message to Nancy Sutley and says, just ask him where he was when we were campaigning. Just ask him. Because, see, Joe Manchin was as quiet as the tomb when that one was running for president in West Virginia. He was nowhere to be found. I would that ye were hot or cold, but ye are neither hot nor cold, and I will spit thee out of my mouth. Where were you, Joe? Huh? Just couldn't quite bring yourself to get on board, could you, Joe? Just trying to straddle that old fence. Couldn't do the right thing, could you, Joe? And now Barack Obama doesn't owe you squat. I hope you go to Washington, D.C. with your hat in your hand and you come away with as empty as when you left. Because, see, Joe, people far better than you have already been to D.C. For years now, we've walked holes in our shoes. Worn ourselves out. People have died waiting to see this day. While you blithely sat there in Charleston and ignored the pleas for help from people up and down Coal River and all over the southern coal fields, Boone County, Raleigh County, Lincoln County, Mingo County, McDowell County, Wyoming County, ignored their pleas. You rotten human being, you. Ignored their pleas because you're a coal broker, Joe Manchin, and I damned well know it. You're a crook. Not in the legal sense, but certainly in the ethical and moral one. And now, on the cusp of Barack Obama doing the most profoundly helpful thing that Appalachia has seen done for it since this nation became a nation, you want to undo it for your own greedy, nefarious ends. And if for no other reason, Joe Manchin, from henceforward, from this day forward, whatever you try to accomplish politically, I will be there, and I will oppose you with whatever power I have. I know you want to be senator. I know the first thing you do every morning when you get up is to check to see if Robert Byrd is still breathing out and breathing in again. We know there are no bounds to the limits of your naked ambition. We know that. We know that being a Manchin, that there has never been a Democrat that you have voted for whose last name was not Manchin. We know that your Uncle A. James Manchin started Democrats for Arch Moore in 1968. And we know that in 1996, you founded Democrats for Cecil Underwood. We know you, Joe! We know what a little con artist you are. And as God is my witness, I will fight you at every turn. For you mean the people of this state no good whatsoever. You have been begged by thousands, Joe Manchin, thousands, to pull the permit that got pulled today. I hope. I haven't seen the list. To pull the permit for the destruction of Coal River Mountain, so that we could begin redefining and reinvigorating and reinventing an economy for Appalachia with the Coal River Wind Project. We know how you've behaved, Joe Manchin. And in separating the wheat from the chaff and the sheep from the goats, you are chaff, Joe Manchin, and you are a goat. And we know you. You want to know how I know? I've got a piece of correspondence here from the Department of Environmental Permitting. I missed this show a few nights ago so that I could go and Agnes could go and we could attend a permit renewal hearing in the gymnasium of our local middle school. Over 100 people showed up. Not one spoke in favor of the renewal of the permit, number S300301, renewal, not one. Compelling scientific evidence, compelling moral evidence, compelling evidence of impact on the local community, compelling evidence of what this ongoing operation that is not affected by today's EPA ruling was presented that night in vast volume. So today, via certified mail, we receive this letter. This is to advise you that the Department of Environmental Protection issued the above-referenced application on March 16, 2009, as per the Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation Act, West Virginia Code, Section 22319, a valid permit carries with it the right of successive renewals with the burden of proof on the opponents of the renewal. You know what? When the opponents show up and the proponents don't, the opponents should take the day. That's the burden of proof. 100-something to 0. Our finding is that this existing permit conditions are being met. The operation is in compliance. The continuing responsibility of the operator is not jeopardized. The required bonding is still in effect, and any required revised or updated information is included. With their own mouths, they sat there and they told us that this mine operator, this mountain removal operator, had been in successive violation of the terms of its permit. That they weren't even removing coal on the permit right now because their violations were so immense that they could not. But in writing, they say any required revised or updated information is included and the operation's in compliance. In accordance with West Virginia Code Section 22B17C, you may appeal this decision to the Surface Mine Board within 30 days after the date upon which the permit was received by the permittee or a representative of the permittee. The permittee will be notified on or after the date of this letter. Please contact this office for the exact date of notification or delivery of the permit to the applicant. This appeal may be submitted to the web, yada, yada, yada. Sincerely, Keith Porterfield, Assistant Director. Get stuffed. I kid you not, over 100 people spoke against that permit. And they weren't like me right now. They weren't yelling and carrying on. Some wept. My lovely wife moved the room to tears. Others did as well. Not one person spoke in favor of the renewal of this permit, but the coal company didn't show up because the coal company knows the game is fixed. It's rigged. There's brakes on the roulette wheel and four aces up the sleeves. And working people and affected community members will never find the queen between those three cards. And always comes up loser. Because this is the Department of Environmental Permitting, not protection. And this is Joe Manchin's Department of Environmental Permitting. And Joe Manchin is at war with the communities that are devastated by mountain removal. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello, Bob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Alan. What's up?
I just wanted to tell you that I got an email today from Coal River Mountain Watch, and it was about a Senate bill, I think by Randy White, about...
Yeah, in West Virginia.
Banning coal slurry into...
Injection, mining. Yes. We use that word, coal slurry injection, but actually what it is coal slurry dumping. They take a giant pipe and they attach it on one end to this toxic nightmare stew that they make when they clean the coal, and they pour it, they dump it down into old coal mines, even on top of the bodies of dead miners killed in mine blasts. They do that. And so my senator, Randy White, is trying to bring an end to it until we can find out exactly how toxic that coal slurry is.
Yeah. I didn't read the whole thing because my dog, Kalula, she likes to put her feet on the computer and she deleted it.
Well, we will have to have a talk with Tallulah about that.
Yeah, she's bad about that. She likes to lean over on the computer and lean towards me. But should we call our senators about this?
No, this is a state law. Right. But it would not hurt to contact the White House, contact your senators about slurry dumping in West Virginia. Not at all.
All right.
Because see, that's the thing. I was very excited and very moved by the positive good news that we had today. But at the same time, there's always a little bit more news. For instance, found out that it turns out that the state of Maryland operations there are dumping thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of gallons of toxic fly ash into West Virginia every year.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's that?
Well, they pump it across the border, across the north branch of the Potomac River, I believe it is, and into a toxic fly ash holding pond, a sludge sea, very similar to the one that broke loose in Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Those streams, water, I guess. Okay.
They've got a pipeline that runs right from their industrial operation. I believe one of them is a paper mill. And into this sludge sea, and I think it's Mineral County, West Virginia.
So disgusting. Another thing I want to talk to you about is AIG. If AIG gave mainly their donations this election cycle to Democrats, and it just makes me think that the Democrats are set up because, you know, Republicans are nothing but big corporations. But then you got these people who listen to Rush Limbaugh and stuff, and then they fall for it. So I imagine, what do you think about that, or what do you know about it?
Frankly, I'm not sure what the donative status is on AIG. I do know that AIG has decided to change its name. They want to make sure that people don't know that they're AIG, so they've changed their name to something like Lovely Unicorn Ranch. I'm being facetious, but yeah, they're changing their name because AIG has become as toxic as its assets.
Yeah, I was reading last night in another article. I can't remember what it was. That the OSS people in the OSS did start AIG.
Did they really?
Yeah. Read it more than once. There must be some truth to it, and CIA agents had something to do with it. Probably some of the... It seemed like there's a lot of corporations that have linked it back all the way to dealing with Germans, to the Nazis. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, we have lots of connections like those. I mean, you know, you've got George Bush's family being the bankers for Fritz Thyssen, who was in turn known as Hitler's angel insofar as he financed the rise of the Third Reich. Just little stuff like that.
Yeah, we people on the left, we have to really be on our guard, even though when we think everything's going good, because these people are really under the table, crooked.
Yeah, I mean, read up on Smedley Butler and the attempt to overthrow Franklin Delano Roosevelt by virtue of a coup. They tried to get Smedley Butler to be the guy who did it. And the they in they tried includes the Bush family. I think the Rockefellers were involved, too.
Yeah, and I've heard that the Rockefellers were even doing business with with Nazis even, or Germans even after the war started. I'm not sure or not.
Well, a lot of American companies were. IBM was, Ford was. You know, because as that Republican president who was probably most similar in comparison to the first George Bush, Calvin Coolidge once noted, the business of America is business. So, in other words, as long as there's a dollar to be made somewhere on the planet, it doesn't matter how the dollar is made or who on whose back it's made or what hell and damnation it creates yawning wide open on the planet. If there's a dollar to be made, the business of America is business. So, you know, so what if we kill a few thousand people in the process? It's only business, and America made money out of it, and that's all that matters. Brought to you by the Republican Party.
So fascists are going to, one of their best, biggest gripes is socialism, because socialism is their biggest enemy, because socialism wants to restrict government from running over our lives.
Well, remember the words of Adolf Hitler upon the Reichstag fire. His first words, Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten, this is the work of the communists. There was no evidence to suggest it was the work of the communists. It turns out it wasn't the work of the communists. But Hitler conveniently blamed the communists, and there you go. Similar to the fact that George Bush called Richard Clark to the White House and said, I want you to find some way for me to be able to blame Saddam Hussein for September 11th, 2001. Richard Clark came back and said, I can find no connections. George W. Bush said, look more.
Mm-hmm. And then before World War II, the people in this country were thinking that when fascism was on the rise, they kept thinking that communism was a bigger threat than fascism.
Yeah, there you go. So you were in Indiana last night. Where are you now, Alan?
I'm in Illinois. I'm on the way to Phoenix, Arizona.
Gracious sakes.
Nice and warm.
That's a long run. How long will it take you to make Phoenix?
Well, I hope to be there by Friday morning, so I think that would be easy to do.
I think I'd get saddle sores doing what you do. I admire your perseverance in all this, but it's got to beat the heck out of driving a big rig.
Yeah, I like this because I could go to I could go do sightseeing when I get around to a place, and then I could find a place to park at night. That's one big problem that truckers have is having find a place to park at night because these big corporations that they drive for do not want to put tax money into parking on the interstates. So, to have parking for us. I think I heard Kate mention that subject before. Kate calls in.
She may have. Yeah, indeed.
Also, another thing I've noticed driving out here is these big truck stops, particularly in the south, you don't see. When I park in the front, you know, where the smaller vehicles go, I didn't notice it so much in the past when I drove a big truck. But when I park in the front, I notice all these homeless people sleeping out there in cars, vans. So that's our
21st century Hooverville, the Bush parking lot.
Yeah, our free market system, how wonderful it is.
Yeah, it's just inspiring, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, it is.
All right, tell Miss Tallulah to quit deleting files, would you?
Okay.
All right, take care, Alan. Drive careful. Bye now.
Bye.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Congratulations. From Brooklyn.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Even though we've never really discussed mountaintop removal, one thing you need to know, I've always been very sympathetic with your plight. It's just one of those things that you can only do so much, you can only juggle so many objects before, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
But I feel your plight in the sense that, being that I come from a somewhat similar background where, as you know, he's Jamaican, and we come from hill country where the bauxite is mined.
Yes, which is the ore that yields aluminum.
Yes, and there's similar situations going on there.
That takes a terrible toll on communities.
Yes, and you know, I, as you know, I'm I just finished a book, and it's being edited and, you know, hopefully published. Already have a few offers to do some readings somewhere and stuff like that. And I write how so much of where my family's from in Jamaica, it's kind of like Appalachia. And, you know, you have to picture Appalachia without Jim Crow laws, and that's where my family's from.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing, and people outside Appalachia sometimes have a hard time getting their mind around it. Obviously, you don't, Kevin. I've got a lot in common with people who live outside, and we have a lot in common with people who live outside Appalachia who have absolutely, you know, they don't speak English. They might not even speak some sort of European language, but they happen to live on top of resources that some corporation wants.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of instead of compensating the people fairly,
yeah,
and going about it as safely as possible, they say, "Katie, bar the doors. These are poor people. Usually they're brown people." And they don't much matter as human beings. Now, most of the people in Appalachia are white, and we've got a racism streak 9 miles wide here, okay? I'll be the first to acknowledge it. But we're treated the same way. They're dumbass hillbillies, and they don't matter.
Well, the thing is, most of them are Celtic origins. And remember our conversation about the Celts.
Yes.
And just like, you know, I am probably one-third of Celtic origin myself. So, trust me, that race, it is what it is, and unfortunately, Western civilization has been built on one-upmanship of other people.
Yes, it has.
And that's just the way it is. See it playing itself out on the African continent when, you know, I hate to use the word tribe, but I don't know whatever word to use, go up against one another. And the atrocities are being committed now for diamonds and uranium and God knows what else. So it is that is as old as going back to ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Divide and conquer.
Well, it really does go back that far, Kevin, because I think I've mentioned in the past, the first real infusion of walking, of real, live, honest walking around money that the ancient Roman Republic had was after they had beaten the Carthaginians and took over the Carthaginian colonies on the Iberian Peninsula, what we know as Spain and Portugal, because there had been massive deposits of silver found.
Yeah.
And they trampled the people there, and they completely the peninsula has still not gotten over it. They completely deforested entire areas of the Iberian Peninsula for the wood needed to stoke the fires needed to refine the silver.
That's why Spain is the only desert in Western Europe.
We only, as far as English-speaking peoples go, the only reason that coal was put to use in on the island of Britain was because, A, it was discovered, and, B, that culture had already grown beyond its bounds, and they had burned up all the trees. But they found coal, and they could burn that to heat their homes and so forth. It was so noxious, in fact, that at the time when it was first discovered, the king passed a mandate saying that coal could not be burned in the city of London when he was in residence because it made him sick. Or her. I think him.
Yeah,
I know it was a him. Because it was pre-Elizabethan. And then, you know, you look at the Mayan culture in Central America. They didn't have any coal, and they burned up all their trees.
Oh, yeah.
And their civilization went done.
Yeah. But going back to English, because I'm, all my book is being edited, I'm writing like a foreword or an epilogue, and I'm writing an all-time favorite story, The Adventures of Robin Hood. And what people, and, you know, I go kind of deep into the story. It's like an essay, you can say. And so I guess in this whole sense, Sherwood Forest was a national park. What do you think?
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea in the least.
and that's why I hint it was illegal to kill the king's deer. I'm kind of picking your brain here, Bob.
No, that's okay. Yeah. Of course, you know, long before there were ideas of national parks, there were ideas of national parks, only they were deemed the king's preserves.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, the idea of a national park is actually
the king's reserve land for game hunting.
Well, yeah, but it's also a more populist vision of that. You know, starting in this country with what, Yosemite? Was that the first national park?
Yellowstone.
Was Yellowstone the first? I thought Yosemite was.
No, Yellowstone.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the idea of setting aside common, you know, and the idea of the commons goes way back in our national character. You know, the Boston Commons is still there, and I guess it's still legal to go and graze your cattle on it, although I imagine people might not take too kindly to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I'm finishing up and being edited, but I'm writing a foreword or blog, whatever you want to call it, and I'm getting deeply into the Robin Hood thing, where how England was a multi-ethnic island, Britain was a multi-ethnic island, and
yes,
the political issues and things of that nature. So, you know, you know, not to deviate, but I do wanted to congratulate you, give you a quick call, and say, you know, God bless. And even though our conversations never really, you know, covered.
Center on the issue, absolutely. Well, Kevin, you know, I appreciate it. I do, because so many people have become aware of this issue by virtue of the conversations that have been had here. You know, folks like when folks like Maria Ganeau or Judy Bonds or Lorella Scarborough or Nick Regalado call in and talk about it on this program, and what little bit that I can do, it has raised consciousness, and it has contributed to the quantum of the weight of awareness in this country. You know, other things like the article in Smithsonian Magazine, the articles in Vanity Fair, articles in National Geographic, have the newspaper articles. The recent editorial in the New York Times that was titled simply Appalachia's Agony.
Oh yeah.
Have worked wonders. Yeah. But all of this has happened because of the persistent efforts of people who are directly affected by this tortured process.
Well,
who have refused to be quiet and have instead served as a shining beacon to everyone everywhere who stands oppressed by corporate America.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, it's even affecting the powers that be, because, you know what? Okay, you talk about the flood that goes into the Potomac River.
Yes.
The previous conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who Georgetown and George Washington University, the two schools where a lot of senators' children, people who live in the Beltway, go to?
Where they
like
get
river rises along there, and who's on their crew team, and those, you know, very Ivy League sports.
Oh yeah, when we were leaving D.C. the other day, I saw somebody rowing a one man skull and somebody else in a four man skull cruising right down the Potomac. They may have been rowing in coal sludge because there had been a recent spill.
And working class people don't join crew teams.
No.
We played basketball, you know, things that will pay you a salary, a living wage when you graduate.
Right.
Yeah, that's more.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And their water supply comes out of the Potomac. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, when it begins to affect that class, they said, oh, Muffy, our precious lumpkin is being poisoned by coal. We must do something about it.
Exactly. And you have to put it to them in that manner. Your children are coming in. If you go to Georgetown or George Washington University and happen to belong to a crew team, a swim team, a water polo team, you know, the very Ivy League preppy sports.
Yeah.
Your kids are swimming in poisonous.
Yeah, it's like that old Palmolive commercial. What? Coal sludge? You're swimming in it.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, Kevin, good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, bro.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob, it's Albert again.
Brother Albert, you're back.
Yeah, well, I'm watching this Barack Obama press conference, and he is absolutely just, he is hitting golf balls with sledgehammers. He is just knocking them 500 yards.
Is he really?
Oh, the answers just giving are just unbelievable. Some guy was trying to bug him about why, just 2 points I wanted to bring up, and I'll let you go. But he says, why did you take 6 days to show your outrage to the American people regarding the AIG crap, right? He's like, well, basically his answer was, he's like, well, because I like to know what I'm talking about before I run my mouth, which I thought was quite beautiful. And then Major Garrett of Fox News decides to start talking to him about currency and about the strength of the American dollar, which Obama just whooped his face with a wet wiffle ball bat. And Major Garrett's last question was, ready for this? Talk about, red meat for the wing nuts, ready? So, do you believe in a worldwide currency?
Oh, please.
Seriously, I heard that, and I got to call Bob.
Oh, make it go away.
And, of course, Barack Hussein Obama said, no, I don't believe in a, worldwide currency unless my face is on it. So
he said that?
No.
Oh, it kind of would have been kind of fun if he had.
That would have been a funny joke. Boy, oh, boy. But, he doesn't have me speaking into that box in his back. I don't know if he's wearing one of those.
I don't think he has. I don't think he needs a box, Albert. I don't think he needs a box.
Yeah, and this is quite an event. I don't ever recall a Bush event having so many people in it. Maybe they just keep showing wide shots of it. But actually, Crooks and Liars has it running off of Hulu.
Hulu, yes.
It's a good little, it's a nice feed. Yeah, I'm sitting here just, they just have it running on the website, on the front page. I was like, whoa. But, yeah, so I just want to run that by
you. You remind me of something before I let you go, just because I love delicious irony. over at thinkprogress.org, they do a bunch of really good work.
Oh, the far left wing.
Yeah, the far left hate site. I think that's what O'Reilly called
it. Far left hate site.
Yes.
Terrorist hate site.
Just like the Nazis. I think O'Reilly said that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Just like the Nazis. And Timothy McVeigh.
Right. There was a post earlier today by Faiz Shakir, and he does some, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm really not up on my names. Let's put it this way. Faiz Shakir does some great work. And posted something earlier today saying, titled, What Would You Ask President Obama? And said, Tonight I will have the privilege of attending and covering President Obama's press conference at the White House for Think Progress. In the unlikely event that I do get called on to ask a question, I'd like to know what our readers are most interested in hearing from President Obama. Wow, responsive journalism. Isn't that just a mind blower, Albert? What would your question be? Please let us know in the comments section below. Registered commenters, please utilize the green recommend button to vote for questions you endorse. If I get to ask a question, I can't guarantee that I will choose one from the comments section, but I will give it very strong consideration. There are a lot of questions about AIG, why the hell won't you prosecute those damned war criminals? I got on this thing pretty quick. I was the 17th commenter, and I just put in quotes, Mr. President, Appalachia is under attack with 3 million pounds of high explosives per day, more than are used in Iraq. Mountain removal coal extraction is destroying Appalachian communities, families, and lives. When can Appalachian people be Americans, too? When, Mr. President, will you put a stop to mountaintop removal mining? And that was today at 10:05 a.m. The thing picked up 22 recommends from the readers. And as far as I can tell, that's second only to 26 recommends for a question, I think, regarding prosecuting the bastards, which is wholly understandable.
Certainly.
And then, along about 2:30 or 3, bang, there it is.
Awesome.
They put the kibosh on all these permits. So every now and then, and sometimes it's positive and sometimes it's negative, but every now and then those little whispers into the ear of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think a lot of people recognize that, Bob.
Oh, and I'll tell you one other thing. I didn't see him pick him for a question yet. I'm still kind of standing near my monitor watching, but he did call on somebody from Televisión or TBN, whatever the Mexican network is, and she asked him about the border conflict thing, if they're, you know, sending troops to the border and all that other stuff, and he didn't really commit to that. I don't think he really committed. He said he would send assistance or this and that, but nothing like, you know, troops. You know, like tanks and stuff. At least I didn't get that.
Yeah, you mean he's not calling out the minute men?
No, I don't think he's quite doing that yet. He just basically said he was giving them assistance and aid. But what he did say that was very super interesting was that we have to stop the guns and money going from the sale. Now, I don't know, you know me. And, you know, this is my whisper to the universe once again. What's the easiest way to stop the money and guns, or the money, because without the money, the guns are irrelevant unless they're going to rob banks. And then, you know, eventually that'll get caught. You know, World Bank don't like them playing like that. But, you know, if they're going to sit there and, you know, if you take the money away, well, there's no money to buy guns. And how are you going to take the money away? Well, what do they sell? Wow, most annoying animal on the planet, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, like... you know, if they don't have that. So I kind of found that a little bit interesting, especially regarding the Attorney General's stance on the issues in California regarding cannabis and that forth. And hopefully their state legislature can get some common sense legislated and end prohibition, and we can move forward once again. And the baby steps, you know, just baby steps. You know, you know, he sounds like he's pretty, I'd like to see him talk about single payer a little bit more, but I think he doesn't want to trip any landmines off because, I mean, he can't even talk about doing anything, and they're over here asking him about global currency. And, I mean, pretty soon, I'm not listening at the moment, but I'm sure one of the guys from Talon News Agency is going to get up and ask him about implantable microchips and holographic space shows to, you know, all that.
Fluoride, Mandrake. Fluoride. Ice cream.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Obama, when do you plan to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem and then declare yourself God? I mean, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, they're already almost asking stuff like that. And I got to say, you know, they're not giving him very many softballs that I've seen. I haven't seen them all, but, you know, I could tell you. And, you know, I tell you, you know, I'm sitting here watching him. And I got to, you know, we didn't talk about it earlier, but I got to bring it up. You know, he's reminding me of President Not Sure, you know, because in a sense, just him talking, you know, a couple of notches above the standard is going to have to make people listen to him. And then they'll start wondering about whose ass it is, why is it farting, why is
yes,
it itchy.
Yes, you know, yes, yes, the obligatory Idiocracy reference for the absolutely.
People will start to read again. And, you know, I think that's what it is. I mean, we're seeing a leader here who will not run his mouth. And let's not forget, this man's a left-handed person.
Yes, okay. Different brain works different.
Exactly. I mean, that's the artistic brain.
And just to, not to put too fine a point on it, but to give you some idea of the dichotomy of the way people think, there's President Not Sure up there, you know, giving real answers. And for those of you who have not seen Idiocracy, that is not an insult. That is a compliment. Contrast that with something that I received from our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky. And that was a YouTube video of my Senator J-Rock opining in a hearing, I think, 2 days ago, Albert, in which he was contemplating the idea that it might have been best had the internet never been invented.
Oh, boy. I'm sure there is some troglodyte out there way back, you know, 20,000 years ago, wishing that we never had fire. You know, there's always
That wheel has been nothing but trouble.
At least, Bob, you know, are these people even real? Like sometimes.
Oh, I know. But really, I mean, Jay, blow all the mountains up. What do I care? I don't live where they're blowing mountains up, Rockefeller. Said we might be better off if the internet had never been invented. Because, and this was his rationale, you know, the Department of Defense gets hit with attacks 3 million times a day. You know, I don't know how much J-Rock gets on the internet, but I can tell him that I'm fairly certain that 2,999,900 of those attacks are from people who are the widow of a Nigerian oil millionaire. You know, or want to sell penis enlargement stuff.
Yeah.
It's the same spam that you get and I get. Yeah. But instead, there's J-Rock in front of the microphone saying, you know, some people say it's Russia, other people say that it's coming from China, but it could just be a teenage boy in his basement in Latvia, and he might take down the entire national defense superstructure.
Yeah, because the Pentagon can't update their Firefox, you know, spam.
Right. Well, J-Rock, if a kid in his pajamas in his basement in Latvia can take down the Pentagon, that's really not the kid in his pajamas in his basement in Latvia's fault, now is it?
Well, you know.
I mean, we've all seen, you know, Matthew Broderick, would you like to play a game? We've seen that! I'm crazy.
But
who the hell am I?
No, you're not crazy, because in a sense, those are the Reagan years. You know, those are the, you know, those horrors of the Reagan years, and, not for nothing, you know. That's the paradigm they still live in. That's the old paradigm. I really don't think that world exists. I don't think that's the world that they think. You know, like the, I don't think that's the word. You don't think that word means what you think it means, kind of thing. You know, I think we're gonna have to get plenty of Thorazine and some apple juice or something, because these guys are just losing it.
They are. Hey, Albert, I got to roll, brother. We're up against it.
Absolutely.
All right,
man. Be good.
Later. What a show. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Let me start out by saying thank you. I usually save them till last. But right up front, thank you to everybody at Coal River Mountain Watch who has fought for so long to see this day and the days that will yet come when mountain removal is outlawed outright. Thank you. I think you get an idea now how hard they fight and have fought and will continue to fight. Thank you. CRMW.net and ColeRiverWind.org. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, web designer, and Renaissance man. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. To Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, whence come every packet of every program on the horn to which you listen. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
Connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
We do have secretism. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Today, America is angry. Some are angry at the current administration, even more are angry at the past administration, and even more are angry at the largest insurance company in the world. known by its now infamous initials, AIG, the American Insurance Group. A company that, if you will, bet a lot of money, bet not only its business, but really the entire world's business, kind of like going to Las Vegas and putting it all in on a poker game, drawing a wrong card, and now we're all paying their bad debts. I don't have to tell you that AIG was bailed out by the Federal Reserve to the tune of, now it's getting close to $170 billion, and yet they still paid their executives $160 million in retention payments. Congress is up in arms. The people are up in arms. The House of Representatives has already voted on a bill to tax away 90% of those bonuses and bonuses of others who happen to take federal money and still pay their people bonuses. But this is not an old question. This is not something, I should say this is an old question. This is not something that hasn't happened before. I think back 100 years ago to Standard Oil, the monopolies of those times, the large railroad companies. The populists were angry then, too, against big business, and it led to some real innovations, things like the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Trust Busters, breaking up monopolies. It's my contention tonight that a company should never be too big to fail. And if a company ever gets to be too big to fail, we need to make sure it never gets to that status. It's a very complex issue of economics, of bankruptcy law, of politics, and, of course, partisanship, Democrats and Republicans. And for that part, I always invite my Republican guest, Republican strategist Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifin Strategies. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thanks for having me back. I look forward to tonight.
Well, I'll tell you, I am not as upset by the populist anger. I know a lot of pundits are wringing their hands and saying the people with their pitchforks and blowtorches, angry at AIG, angry at Wall Street, that there's some horrible danger. I actually don't mind a bit of populist anger. I think it's justified in this case, and I think it helps keep policymakers, both in Congress and in the administration, and those executives on Wall Street, recognizing that there's a point to which the American people will not go. And even though the bonuses are 0.1% of the amount of money we've given them, they are so egregious to reward people who, in effect, have ruined the entire economy, to reward that company, that I think that kind of populism scares Wall Street, and Wall Street should be scared and understand that they shouldn't practice these excesses.
Mark, I have no problem with the people being angry. In fact, I'm angry myself. I put myself in that category. I think what AIG did in distributing those bonuses was absolutely atrocious, uncalled for. I can think of four or five other superlatives, which I'll spare our viewers. But let me quote our president, who I think very eloquently says, the one thing we don't want to do is we don't want to govern out of anger.
Well, I think what he said, to be more precise, he did say we don't want to govern out of anger, but he says we need to channel that anger. And I think you'll find that a lot of great moments in American history are from channeled anger. Indeed, as I mentioned, the great violations of ethical practices, the great wealth of the trusts and so forth, and at the turn of the century, led to a lot of reforms. They led to the Food and Drug Administration. They led to the Sherman Antitrust Act. The run on the banks in the 1930s led to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. The Panic of 1907 led to the Federal Reserve. A lot of terrific progressive institutions.